Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, where you stay up to date in 48 on all things NBA. I'm Ross Geiger, the host of the show, and I'm joined alongside my two co-hosts and Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 17, and this is our NBA trade deadline special. Bruce and World B, I gotta ask, are your heads still spinning?
Just trying to keep up with this stuff has been really like a dizzying exercise. But I will say this. After my Boston Celtics destroyed the Nets and chased Kyrie out of town, they also chased Kevin Durant out of town too. So take that, Brooklyn.
What about you, World? Are you hanging in there?
This has been one of the busier trade deadlines that I can remember, at least in recent years. You have big names. You have mid role player pieces. You have key elements going from one place to another, and you know, leave it to the Nets to upstage the Josh Hart deal to the Knicks by getting rid of one of the all-time greats. That was, you know, we can't own the city for even a day.
No, well, you teed off the first quarter there real nicely here, as we're going to go ahead and skip opening tip, and this may be the last time I say this in the first quarter, but yet again, let's discuss the Brooklyn Nets as they called in the house cleaners to clean out the Barclays Center.
Hey, exactly 1 year ago today, the Nets had a budding super team of James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. Today, they have none of them. This franchise has been searching for the right combination since dealing draft picks to Boston in 2013 for Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Jason Terry, a trade that gutted their franchise and built Boston into a championship contender. Now with the two trades this week, they've traded stars for a lot of future considerations and moves that are kind of the opposite of their previous deals. So maybe this shows a new direction for that franchise. Maybe they're going to follow the Boston pattern, which seems to have worked pretty well.
Yeah, no doubt about that. World B, what do you have to say on Brooklyn?
Well, you know, you applaud the aggressive nature of their moves. They were trying to, you know, they were in. They were trying to get it all together. And mistake number one was really bringing in an inexperienced coach. They got rid of, well, first they got rid of, you know, Kenny Atkinson, who was, I think, a pretty good coach. Uh-huh. And eventually they brought in Steve Nash, which was a bizarre move to begin with. We all thought that. And obviously it didn't work out. And we talked about it in the previous episode. I mentioned it. This whole plan, while you applaud the effort, can only be thought of as a colossal failure. There's just on no level 14 games, one playoff series in three seasons with this group. It's a horrible, horrible decision, you know, that they went one after the other. And, you know, they're reaping the benefits. So we'll see how big of a hit. It doesn't look like they're going to take a massive hit, but it's definitely not a championship contender that they had a month ago.
Yeah, and you mentioned those 14 playoff games that they did get. I think I saw this morning they had gotten 16 games. James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving combined. Only 16 times did those three play on the same floor together.
And so, six in the playoffs. I think it's six of those one playoff series.
Yeah.
That's all you got out of those three together.
You know, it was fascinating. So last night after Kyrie Irving made his debut for Dallas, okay, a successful debut, you know, I was listening to his press conference and all. He still doesn't get it. He still doesn't seem to understand it. He talked about all these sort of things that happen in Brooklyn, and this happened and this happened, but he doesn't seem to kind of insert himself into the equation like, and that happened because of me, and that happened because of me, and that domino fell because I pulled this BS. I didn't get a vaccine. Everyone else got a vaccine. I, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like he's a passive observer as opposed to the tumor in the body of the Nets.
And by the way,
and he's never going to get it either.
And it speaks volumes, I think, to how the Nets view these three players in that James Harden, they worked out a deal where he wanted to go last year in Philly. KD's always made no secret about wanting to go to Phoenix. Where did he end up in? Phoenix. Kyrie made no secret, or no secret at least, where he wanted to end up in L.A. So where did they send him? Dallas.
Yeah, I thought that pettiness on that on Joe Tsai's behalf was refreshingly old school. I love that.
Absolutely. No problem with it at all. Hey, I'm the one paying the money. I'll make the decisions. Now, it's what's best for the Impact. You know, he can screw over Kyrie all he wants. How much is it going to screw over his franchise? I think he got a good return on it, so that works out. But I don't think you don't send him to L.A. to spite him and send him somewhere else and get screwed yourself. I don't think that's the right way to do it. I think sending them to Dallas with the return they got was fine. It was just better on top of everything that they didn't send him where he wanted to go.
Hey, Ross, yeah. Russ, do you think that Mark Cuban of Shark Tank fame, who is like as shrewd of a businessman as there is, you think Kyrie's going to stick it up his after this season and just say, I'm going to go sign with the Lakers now. See you, Mark.
I do have my questions in regard to that, and I'm kind of surprised. I think I mentioned this last episode with Dave Woolon as our guest, but I'm surprised that this is the big swing in order to keep Luka Doncic happy. I mean, you really kind of get one crack at one of these big splashes, and he took his swing with Kyrie Irving, who's been the most unreliable and kind of unpredictable player we've seen in recent memory, maybe in history of the NBA. I can't date it past like the 1990s, but he's got to definitely be up there. And, you know, there's already rumors swirling about Kyrie still being interested in Phoenix. I mean, as of now, as I said on the last show, Kyrie Irving should be looked at as a rental this year. I mean, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. And, you know, last night did look pretty good. I mean, I think he had 20 plus points and Dallas pulled off the big victory on the road against the Clippers. But with KD going to Phoenix, the Suns had been rumored and it seemed confirmed because Chris Paul was asked about it being dangled to Brooklyn for Kyrie Irving before, you know, they'd ultimately took the Dallas package. So what's not to say Chris Paul couldn't be traded this summer by new owner Matt Ishbia, who definitely seems to have some guts here, as we'll talk about their trade for Kevin Durant and the package they sent. But keep an eye on that. I think Kyrie Irving and, you know, maybe landing in Phoenix isn't out of the question yet. And that should be a concern to Mr. Shark Tank and Mark Cuban.
You know, back to Brooklyn, I think I'm going to give Sean Marks some credit for these moves. Okay. Kyrie was a cancer. All right. KD has wanted out for a while. So in addition to all the picks from Phoenix and Dallas, because I got picks from Dallas too, they've added Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and then they took Jay Crowder and turned him around for 5 second round draft picks to Milwaukee. So you put them with that core of Nick Claxton, 40-point scoring machine Cam Thomas, Royce O'Neal, if they keep him, and a lot of teams would like Royce O'Neal, but unless we're behind on our wire service copy here, I guess he's still there. And here's an opportunity one more time for Ben Simmons to kind of step up and be more than what he's been. So although some of this was created by Sean Marks, I think he did a damn good job of cleaning this thing up and setting them on a course to, you know, for the franchise to move forward. I think they're better off today than they were a week ago, even if their record won't be as good the rest of the season.
I think their lineup that they could potentially throw out there with Dinwiddie, the suddenly scoring machine that is Cam Thomas, Mikal Bridges, who we mentioned, I think this is an opportunity for him to become an all-star in this, not only on this team, but in this market. Claxton, who's going to be a contender for most improved player. And then it's either Ben Simmons or, you know, Finney Smith or whatever you want to put at that to wrap up the starting five. That's not a bad lineup. It's not a championship lineup, but it's not a bad, it's a playoff lineup, I think. And it's definitely a lockdown defensive lineup where teams are going to have trouble scoring on that group, I think. And it's an amazing thing to go from where they were a month ago before Kevin Durant got hurt to where they are now. Not just that those guys are gone, the roster that is there. They're not, you know, the Spurs roster. They actually have people, teams, and players in place to do something this year, and they have all those picks and all those things coming up in the future to either use or parlay into something else.
And sorry, Russ, I just want to say one thing quick, then you jump in. I looked at their schedule. They got 28 games to go. I looked at their schedule. I think it's very realistic, even with integrating all these new guys into the team and all, and that's another thing we'll talk about maybe in a minute with Jacques Vaughn's challenge. I think they have a really good chance to go 14-14, okay? That puts them at 46 wins. And I think 46 wins in the East this year gets you the number six spot. So I think they could actually make it into the postseason without having to do the play-in thing. Go ahead, Ross. Sorry.
Yeah, and I'll say this in regards to the new roster and the new roster makeup of the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, you look at this group, and what's not to say they're not the second coming of the Utah Jazz. I mean, we were looking at the Utah Jazz coming into this season, not really having much there. And I see a lot of similarities between the two groups. You've got obviously a shot blocker and Nick Claxton, kind of like the Walker Kessler. You've got a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie that can maybe be a guy like Lauri Markkanen, not to that degree, but like he has put up some big games when Luka's been out on Dallas. Yeah. He's going to get more of an opportunity to go ahead and step up and perform. And Mikal Bridges, I know this is a guy we mentioned off air, and Roll B, maybe I'll let you elaborate on it because you were pretty passionate about it, but he's going to have an opportunity to step up and really show what he can do on the offensive side. We know what he can do defensively. He's put up some great games in Devin Booker's absence. He's going to get a chance to really step up and have a role as a go-to primary scorer on the wing for Brooklyn. And I think in general, they acquired a lot of guys that have a lot of good experience going ahead and helping out teams however they may. And now they're getting that big chance to kind of prove what they can do. And I think they got a lot of unselfish players. I think these guys are going to make the right pass, make the right play. And that's what's going down in Utah, and they've had a lot of success with it.
And the other thing is, too, I agree. And I think the other thing is, too, they're in New York City, too. We all talk about the Knicks. The Knicks are my team, blah, blah, blah. And it's always the lure of the garden. No matter how bad the pieces are that the Knicks throw out there in past years, it's the lure of the garden. It's being in New York that is somehow an attraction. Well, Brooklyn's right there, too. They get the same market as the Knicks do. And they have players now. Now, I'll be honest with you. You throw out that starting five, like I just mentioned, the potential starting five against the Knicks starting five, it's at least a tight one. It's not you don't just dismiss because the Knicks have an all-star in Randall and a potential all-star in Jalen Brunson. You don't just immediately give them the edge. So I think they have the market for these guys to stay focused and play hard. They have, obviously, with a guy like Mikal Bridges, have a Cam Johnson, have a pedigree of success at the championship level, at least making it to that point, to stay focused and stay busy. And I agree with you. I think Mikal Bridges, I just mentioned, has a chance to become the man on a team like this and become an all-star caliber player with his defense and his scoring ability without having to worry about Booker anymore getting his points. Not that he was ever worried, but this is his opportunity to be a number one guy.
Yep. I think one of the things that Jacques Vaughn, throughout all of this turmoil with this team since he took over, I think most people would agree that he's done a really, really good job managing that team. This is a challenge, though. This is going to be like training camp with a ton of new guys coming to the team in the middle of a season, 54 games in, 28 to go, competing for a playoff spot. I said before, if they can manage to play 500 the rest of the way, there's probably going to be in the top six. But a lot of people are going to be looking at how Jacques Vaughn handles this. And if he is able to kind of get these guys on the same page and kind of instill a spirit on that team, an underdog spirit, the world, nobody wanted us, but we want us, rah, 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 that kind of thing. His stock has the potential to go way up as a coach as he navigates this.
I think they have their coach, too. I agree with you. I think on top of everything else we just mentioned, they have their coach to go forward with this group. I think the way he is commanded, it feels like he had the respect of Kyrie and KD while he was there, while they were, you know, they both, you know, thought very high. You didn't hear any criticism of him while they were playing well after the coaching change. So I think that's have their, on top of everything else, they have their coach to lead this group. So I think that's another good thing going for the Nets.
And Cam Johnson's another guy who's got a contract year going on. He's looking to get paid this summer as one of the premier shooters in the league. He's going to have a big chance to show off that shot here and get even more touches with Brooklyn. And totally agree, Bruce. I mean, you look at their roster, and they've got a bunch of second round or G League guys that's how they made their way to the NBA. Seth Curry came from the G League. Mm-hmm. Spencer Dinwiddie came from the G League. Cam Thomas has been buried on the bench until recently, and now he's putting up historical numbers with back-to-back 40-point games. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think they're a league pass watch. I'll be definitely looking forward to seeing what they do from here on out.
And I think the Brooklyn fans are really going to embrace this team. I think they're going to be like, we finally have people that want to be here. You know, yep. We're going to maybe not win the championship, but these are our guys now.
I totally agree. I think they're ticked off about how all this went down, and I think they have a lineup that they can get behind. As long as those guys, you know, play hard, there's obviously, we mentioned, you know, throughout this segment, they have a lot. There's a lot of talent on that, in that group. You know, they came from the G League, or they weren't highly, but there's a lot of talent that's developed into. I mean, Nick Claxton is going to be, you know, one of the candidates for most improved player and defensive player of the year. I mean, he's improved that much. And there's enough guys on this team with a good structured coach and a staff. I agree. I think the fans are going to get behind this group. And I think there's going to be, they're certainly a playoff team. They're not falling out of the playoff group.
So as we venture into our second quarter here, let's talk about the second half of that big trade. Probably the biggest trade in Phoenix Suns history. I think it definitely rivals the Charles Barkley acquisition by the Suns. I mean, obviously they made it to the finals, so pressure's on. But Kevin Durant headed to the Valley of the Sun. We talked about what Phoenix gave up. It came on a day when Matt Ishbia held his introductory press conference and even told the media, ironically, that he loved the team that was in place. Well, how much did you love it? You just traded him. All pretty much the young core away to get Kevin Durant, but don't think anyone is too disappointed with that. How are you guys looking at Phoenix here with Kevin Durant being partnered up with Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and you know, one of the guys that was, you know, tagged along as maybe being traded for KD was DeAndre Ayton, and they were able to keep him. So what's your first takeaways and first reactions to the new Suns core?
Going into the season, Phoenix was my team to come out of the West. Now, I certainly didn't envision this team looking like it does right now. I mean, who knew? But I think this puts them right up there with Denver. My concern for them is they're very top heavy, and I'm wondering if they're going to have enough depth should anybody else get injured. And you've got an old man in Chris Paul. You've got a frequently injured guy in Kevin Durant, you've got a sometimes injured guy in Devin Booker. So if one of those guys goes down, you know, who's going to be able to step up for that team? I mean, TJ Warren, I guess, will help, you know, but, you know, and I know Ross, he's a favorite of yours. So he's probably going to get a real big chance there too. But I'd say I'd kind of put them right there with Denver now. I think maybe even ahead of Memphis, which I'm kind of surprising myself even saying that.
Yeah, I think they definitely are right atop the West and might be the favorites now outside of Denver. You know, just the powerhouse combination of bringing Kevin Durant in just completely changes the landscape of the West. And, you know, I was sort of surprised there weren't other moves made by a team such as Memphis to try to improve their roster to try to keep up here, because I think the Suns are definitely number two right now, even though it's still in an unproven state with Kevin Durant having even landed in Phoenix just yet. But I think they'll be fine. I think Landry Shamet's going to have to step up in addition to TJ Warren. Obviously, Torrey Craig's probably going to be that starting grunt worker on the boards and just guarding tougher guys. But he has shown an ability to do that, was with this Phoenix Suns team when they faced the Bucks in the finals. So he's got some good experience. And then, you know, they're really banking on the health of Cameron Payne. Cameron Payne's going to have to come back in and go ahead and provide some good minutes, because let's face it, it's nice that Chris Paul's back, but I still think they need to keep an eye on those minutes and make sure that, you know, he doesn't come down with injury, because everything could come crashing right down on this team once again if Chris Paul were to go down, or if Kevin Durant comes back and they don't monitor his minutes as well. So that's the only thing I'm a little concerned about, is all the draft capital they gave up, all the young players. They kind of got rid of their depth, and you know, Kevin Durant and Chris Paul are both aging with lots of miles. So that would be the one concern. But overall, I think Suns fans should be celebrating and very happy with this deal.
World I'll B? Tell you this. I think health is the biggest factor with this team, as you just mentioned, with Booker coming back, with KD's injury, with Chris Paul in and out of the lineup because of age and wear and tear, not to mention campaign. I will say this. If everybody's healthy, well, it's going to have a hard time convincing me there's a better team out in the West than this group, including Denver, which I think Denver's starting to play much better on the defensive end, where I thought that was their deficiency. They're starting to – they've gone from the bottom to the middle of the pack, so they're starting to pick it up. But that lineup is really, really tough. You're going to have to guard Booker. You're going to have to guard KD, two of the best scorers we have in the league. DeAndre Ayton is suddenly become a superstar in the middle of the last couple of games. I don't think their depth is a concern if their health is not great. If they're all healthy, if they can figure out a way to last the season, then you have Shamet and Campaign coming off the bench at the guards, and you have
Damian Lee.
Damian Lee can come off the bench there. TJ Warren can come off the bench. They have pieces to fill the roles that you sent away to get Kevin Durant. So I think that it's the same case with a lot of these teams. Health is a big concern going forward. The Clippers have health issues, even though everybody's healthy at the moment. You know, let's see if Paul George and Kawhi Leonard can stay healthy. You have, obviously, Phoenix. I think Dallas, with Luka getting banged up the last couple of weeks, is a concern going forward. So there's a lot of teams with a lot riding on this, and health, and obviously the Pelicans, who've just gone in the tank after they lose Brandon Ingram for a while, and Zion, who's not going to be back until after the break. So it's having a real impact on the West going forward.
Now, you know, Jay Crowder was sort of the Phoenix version of Kyrie Irving in the distractions department. But losing Mikal Bridges is really going to hurt their perimeter defense and also their team chemistry. I mean, he was their constant this year. He was the guy who was in the lineup every game. When Booker and Paul were injured, you know, he stepped up. But I really think this trade is going to be great for DeAndre Ayton. I think he's going to totally flourish playing with KD for a couple of reasons. Number one, if he just focuses on defense and rebounding, which has always kind of been his thing, okay, he's going to get easy points by just cutting, keeping his head up, because KD is going to get double teamed. And, you know, and when he's down low or on the baseline, whatever, if DeAndre Ayton's just making himself a target, he's going to get a lot of easy buckets. And I also think KD's had a great defensive year, too, for Brooklyn. He's played great defense, and he's a big. I mean, he's a good, like, 6'10", 6'11 guy. I think KD's going to help him a lot on defense. And one of my big complaints about Ayton has always been he hasn't really been a very aggressive shot blocker for a guy who's 7 feet tall. Well, I think now that he's got KD out there with him, I think that might unlock him to be a little bit more aggressive, you know, blocking shots as well as patrolling the lane. So I think that Ayton stands to benefit big time by having KD out there with him at both ends of the court.
Yeah, I would agree, Bruce. And I think a lot of pressure is taken off DeAndre Ayton as well. I think Kevin Durant's going to get, obviously, the primary post touches. So he's going to take that pressure off DeAndre having to score in the low post to free things up outside. And like you said, he can focus on the boards. He can focus on blocking some more shots or just getting easier buckets, because Kevin Durant on the block is going to demand a double team. So he's going to get some nice dump offs there.
Just have your hands ready.
Just have those hands ready, because he's going to get a lot of more. He's going to get spoon fed even more than he does right now with Chris Paul being his point guard, if you can believe that. So I think this is a heck of a trade for Phoenix. I'm excited to see how it works out. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for all the Suns fans that both Chris Paul and Kevin Durant stay healthy. And then one other minor move they made that I don't want to fail to mention is they did get off the contract of Dario Saric. I believe that was expiring money, but they sent him along with a second round pick to Oklahoma City for Darius Bazley. Don't think that Bazley is actually going to stick in Phoenix. I think that's actually just going to open up a slot for them to go ahead and add a buyout candidate. So they're going to have an open roster spot available. And that could also be interesting. I mean, if you get bought out by a team that you're on, who wouldn't want to play with Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker to try to win a championship? So they might have some good candidates that could be interested in joining the Suns team.
It's a good day for the Suns. It's a really good day for the Suns.
Absolutely. By the way, I don't disagree with anything you said about Ayton and whatever, how this could benefit him. But it's – and I get it. But can we baby the guy any more than we do already? The guy just signed a max deal in the offer sheet, and we're talking about him like, oh, this will benefit him because he doesn't have to carry the load. Well, I just gave you a max contract. Carry something. Yeah. I mean, come on. I get, you know, what KD brings and what it all means, and now they're legitimately a championship contender, more so than they were a week ago. But we're talking about, well, now DeAndre doesn't have to do this, or he doesn't have – well, he's got to do something here. He just wanted a max deal, and he got ticked off that the Suns didn't give it to him, and he made him sign the offer sheet, you know, offer sheet that, you know, the Pacers gave him. But, like, you got to do something now. You got to carry a little bit of the load.
Yeah, I mean, one thing with DeAndre Ayton, let's give him some credit here. Defensively, he's a guy that can be in a high pick and roll and doesn't get totally exposed. He moves his feet pretty well. He knows where to be positionally on the floor. So I think defensively, like, that's one big thing going for him. He's a 7-footer that can move. I wouldn't, of course, put him on a Bam Adebayo level, but he's certainly in the tier right below that at the top. And that's a hell of a value to have to a team that's playing in, you know, 7-game playoff series.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think you're right. And at the end of the day, I don't begrudge him for getting his money. Let's all get whatever we can get, and that's fine. It's just funny that, you know, he wanted a max deal. The Pacers gave it to him. The Suns match, and now we're talking about him like, well, now he doesn't have to do this as much. He can do this, and it's all true. But it's like, at what point do you just step up? I mean, and he has the last couple of games. He's had a couple of 30, 15 games. He's playing like an all-star, you know, at times. But it's just, stop with the baby and, you know, DeAndre. Let's go out and dominate.
He's just moved one step down in the pecking order, though, right? Because, so in some ways, I don't know much about his personality, but I have heard people say that he can be pretty laid back or whatever. So, you know, some guys, they might get the max contract, but they're not the alpha male mentality type. He might be more ideally suited to not necessarily do less, but do some of the dirty work things that he does just a little bit better. That's all.
For sure.
This is a wonderful opportunity for him.
Yes.
And with that, we've reached our halftime buzzer, and we will be back in just a moment. And we're back with the third quarter. And to get us kicked off here for the second half, no other team to talk about than the Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, they just had some history that took place with LeBron becoming the all-time scoring leader, which was pretty exciting despite them losing that game against Oklahoma City. But this deadline week, the Lakers also moved around some chess pieces as they continue to tinker with their complicated chemistry experiment. So will this deadline week increase their chances And I'll go over a little bit of the trades here and then let you guys kind of bounce your ideas off that. They first moved Juan Toscano-Anderson, Damian Jones, and a lightly protected 2027 first rounder, which was a prize pick, along with Russell Westbrook, of all players. And they shipped them out to Utah. D'Angelo Russell is headed to the Lakers, along with Malik Beasley and Jared Vanderbilt from Utah. And then, of course, Minnesota in that three-team swap receives Mike Conley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker. And then today, on Thursday, earlier in the afternoon, they traded Patrick Beverley to Orlando in exchange for Mo Bamba. And Thomas Bryant requested a trade after AD started to gobble up a lot of his minutes after having some strong performances with the Lakers. And Bryant had his wish answered there as he was traded to the Denver Nuggets. So, fellas, what do you take away from all these moves from the Lakers? And do you think LeBron, Anthony Davis are in any better spot than they were, say, a few days prior?
If LeBron can drag this group of knuckleheads into the playoffs and do any damage at all in the postseason, it will be one more amazing achievement for the man who would be GOAT. Here's my favorite part of this trade, and there's so many good things to talk about here. We're probably headed to overtime today, but that's okay. I think with the Lakers, it's like they finally unloaded one Russell Westbrook and two little-used reserves, as you said, and got back Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, and another Russell, in this case, D'Angelo Russell. I find this move fascinating. Scottie Pippen Jr. is now going to be teammates with Malik Beasley, who was romantically involved with his mother, Larsa, within the past couple of years. Has Scottie requested a trade yet? I mean, No. What... WTF, we're trying to keep it clean here, okay? Yep. How is that going to work, fellas?
I mean, fortunately, Scottie Pippen Jr. is not a big piece to this puzzle, but definitely an awkward first introductory welcome in the locker room when he goes to shake his hand. Hi, I'm Malik. And he's like, yeah, I know who you are. Like, you were dating my mom a few months ago. So, unbelievable story there. Fortunately for Malik Beasley, he does bring an outside shot, which is much needed on this Lakers group. Definitely looking forward to see what he can do there. I've always been a big fan of Jared Vanderbilt. I know I've mentioned it on the show. Not quite sure how he fits with this mix of a team that already acquired Rui Hachimura just a few weeks ago. It's not doing much for me. D'Angelo Russell, I think they're having a parade in Minnesota that he's gone. He's kind of been a train wreck there. He can shoot a spot up three, but he just doesn't know exactly when and when not to do that. I think he makes a lot of wild passes, takes a lot of wild shots, very inefficient player. I think he's going to drive LeBron to get some more gray hairs in the process. But I don't know, World B, can you help me out? Because I this Lakers team is just nonstop entertainment, and I guess it's a wait and see approach at all times with this group. Is Anthony Davis going to stay healthy? We'll have to wait and see. Is this group going to mesh? We'll have to wait and see. What do you have to say?
As Bruce pointed out, with the Scottie Pippen, Malik Beasley fiasco, only the Lakers could get rid of their chemistry problem or get rid of Russell Westbrook and not improve their team chemistry. Yeah. Only the Lakers could pull that off. How is that possible that you just get rid of somebody who, by all accounts, was a pain in the butt on the court and chemistry-wise, whatever, and you're no better than you were chemistry-wise in that locker room? So I don't see where this improves. I think D'Angelo Russell wasn't as bad as Ross makes out, especially of late. He had been playing better for them, as the Wolves have been playing better. He's been one of the reasons. I don't know where he fits into that lineup. He's another player. He's a better player than what they gave up. I'll put it that way. I think he's much better this year than Russell Westbrook was. I'm going to miss seeing the highlight reels of Russell in the Laker uniform taking three-pointers that bounce off the top of the backboard or trying for a mid-range bank shot that hits nothing but the backboard and bypasses the rim entirely. I'm going to miss that. That was a treat all its own. But it really doesn't put them in any better spot, I don't think, than they were when the day began. And they're still battling to just to get in the play-in tournament. It doesn't put them any better. It's all going to be on KD and LeBron at the end of the day. And they haven't shown, since AD's come back, they haven't shown the ability to dominate when they're on the court yet. They just haven't.
When I talked about the knuckleheads that LeBron's going to have to drag into the post, knucklehead number one is D'Angelo Russell. I'm sure you all recall, he started his career as a Laker. He was drafted by the Lakers. He got his butt traded because, you may also remember, he leaked video of Nick Young, Swaggy P, talking about cheating on Iggy Azalea and earned himself the snitch label, okay?
Yep.
About the worst label a teammate can have, okay? Is he a trustworthy teammate? Is someone like LeBron James going to trust this guy? You know, is Darvin Ham going to trust this guy? That's part of why this whole Laker discussion is so much fun to me. Between the Pippen Beasley dynamic and the D'Angelo Russell, you know, snitch dynamic. And then, oh, Mo Bamba is only there because he got in that fight a week and a half ago. Orlando probably said, we've had it with this dude. Let's get him out of here. Okay. So you talk about like taking a situation of turmoil and just like stirring in some new stuff that could just make it worse. I love it.
Well, hopefully D'Angelo Russell learned his lesson long ago. I mean, he was a younger player then, but while we're on the topic of video and cameras, I really hope Patrick Beverley takes his camera down to Orlando. And before he gets bought out, you know, that camera he had in Boston, I hope he takes a few photos at Disney World because, you know, I don't know how long his stay is going to be, but certainly I think getting him out of L.A. is probably for the best, too. I mean, he obviously couldn't shoot. He had his on-the-court antics that probably were growing old within the Lakers organization, same with LeBron. And, you know, another part of this with Mo Bamba is the one thing I'll give him credit for is, you know, Mo Bamba is a little bit more athletic than Thomas Bryant. You know, he's more of a shot blocker, a guy that can catch a lob. And I think they're close, but I'd say Mo Bamba's a better three-point shooter on the few times that he does get a pick-and-pop opportunity. So kind of curious to see him there. I mean, he was in a situation in Orlando where there were like five centers. So he's now coming into a role where he's got to be the primary backup unless they go with Wenyen Gabriel. But they obviously traded for him for a reason. And, you know, if Anthony Davis goes down, we're really going to be able to see what Mo Bamba can do. So the Bamba piece of it is something I'm actually excited to see just because, you know, maybe he just needed a clean slate, a new clean plate, get away from Orlando and see if this is just a better situation playing with better players. But Worldby, what do you have to say on Bamba? You're our Orlando correspondent.
Well, I'll tell you this. First things first, I'm a Thomas Bryant fan. I have been for a long time. So I happen to think he's a better player than Mo Bamba. Maybe okay. Mo Bamba, or at least he's a more productive player, or he's proven to be. Mo Bamba may have more potential down the line, but he hasn't shown it yet to me. Mm-hmm. He's shown it at times, just not as much as I think Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant's just a victim of bad health. He's produced whenever he's had his time. As far as, you know, down in Orlando, it was a case of Wendell Carter Jr. was getting the starting minutes. They have Mo Wagner coming off the bench who could start for a lot of teams too. He's a very talented player. And then Jonathan Isaac getting back on the court really made there was just no minutes to go around for Mo Bamba. If you're picking between those three, Jonathan Isaac showed that, or he's showing, I shouldn't say, he's only getting about 10 minutes a night, but he's showing in those minutes that he is capable of really being a productive player more so than Mo Bamba. And at the end of the day, there's only so many minutes to go around at the front court position. And, you know, if I'm picking between those four, Mo's out. Mo Bamba is out. So that's where that went. They need to free up minutes for younger players. You know, some of the other young guys, which that's all they have these days are young guys, yeah. It seems like. And so he was kind of the odd man out. I don't think the stupid fight that they had last week really – it probably didn't help, but I don't know if that was a deciding fight. He wasn't getting playing time. There was a reason he got in the fight on the bench because he was on the bench. You know, this, and I don't think that really – that fight really made a difference. I think the fact that he wasn't getting time – and let's see what we can do in term, and you know, if they buy out Beverly and free up a spot, free up cap space, all that stuff going forward, it only helps the Magic, I think.
I think you got to give Rob Pelinka some credit on that one because he got Mo Bamba for nothing. I mean, Patrick Beverly is really at this point in his career, he's just, you know, somebody will pick him up probably, but Patrick Beverly is really not that good and he's old. Mo Bamba is at least young, and you know, and as you said before, AD needs a reliable backup, A, to keep his minutes down, and B, to just be there when he gets hurt, which usually happens once or twice a season.
Well, my thing was, I think they had the backup in Thomas Bryant. Now you say he wanted a trade. Okay, well now he's going to Denver. He's backing up an MVP, so I mean maybe
he's playing Denver now.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it wasn't exactly I want more minutes. Maybe it was the chaotic atmosphere that comes with being a Laker these days. So I don't know if they improved or not. Like I said, I'm a bigger fan of Thomas Bryant than Mo Bamba. And then they wanted shooting help, and they get Malik Beasley, which is fine. But we talked about early on in this in our podcast, right up the road is Malik Monk, another Malik that they could have just kept and then had to make all these moves and could have provided the three-point shooting that they obviously need because LeBron James, for his excellence and everything, and AD for his all-star capability, AD doesn't shoot the three anymore, thankfully. His work should be more in the post. And LeBron, for all his greatness, and we've talked about it, I'm a big, huge fan of his. He's having a terrible season shooting the three. Just terrible. And if those are your two main players and neither one of them, either one's not taking the three anymore and the other one can't hit it, yeah, you need shooters. But you had one, is my point, you know, months ago.
Yep. And one other thing I wanted to do before we move on to our fourth quarter here is I think we'd be doing a disservice if we failed to mention Mike Conley heading to the Minnesota Timberwolves. You know, we had talked about Anthony Edwards maybe needing some mentoring, needing, you know, some help, some guidance. What better player? I think that, I mean, people have given the Minnesota Timberwolves a hard time of like, you traded all those guys and what'd you get back? I think Mike Conley is going to be a blessing in disguise to Anthony Edwards' career. I think he's going to put him in good positions out on the floor, calling his sets, getting him the ball when he needs it, where he needs it. And I'm looking forward to that pairing in the backcourt there in Minnesota, getting a very solid seasoned veteran who's stable at the point guard position, much more consistent than a D'Angelo Russell, and kind of see where this takes Anthony Edwards. What do you guys think?
I agree. I'm a huge Mike Conley fan, always have been. People forget there was a time that he was the highest paid player in the NBA. When he signed his contract a number of years ago, he signed like a 5-year deal for like $150-something million. You know, that was like $30 million a year. I don't think anybody made $30 million a year before he signed that contract. So this is a guy who's aging pretty well. You know, we talked about Harrison Barnes aging well a couple shows ago. Mike Conley's aging well, too. And as you correctly pointed out, that is a veteran influence, a professional guy, doesn't care about his own numbers, wants to win some games, wants to help a guy like Anthony Edwards, so he'll be an all-star for the next number of years. I couldn't agree more. I think it's a wonderful pickup for a young team to have a guy like that.
And you look at that lineup, all of a sudden, you know, I mentioned Minnesota a couple episodes ago. They were my team of the moment, team on the rise, and they've actually been keeping with that, which goes against everything I say, my predictions, usually they go right in the poopers. Thank you, New Orleans Pelicans. And so, you know, I'm waiting for the shoe to drop on them. But, if you know, to be serious about it, I have a nice, solid backcourt with Conley and now Edwards. Rudy Gobert will give him time to get solidified there a little bit more, I suppose.
Well,
even though
let me cut you off real quick. Is anyone more familiar with Rudy Gobert than Mike Conley?
Right. That's an excellent point. And that, let's assume it can only help his game because it really hasn't had the impact on Minnesota as they were hoping for, and they're stuck with him for a while. So you better do something to make it work. And then, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, when he gets healthy, you got to fill out the last spot, but that's a decent group to build on and compete with down the stretch. It's going to be health with Mike Conley. That's what it is with all these other guys. It's going to be a health issue with him going forward. If he can stay healthy, that's a nice piece to bat. I don't know where they are in the championship level, but that's a really competitive, solid playoff type potential lineup in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think just to kind of close things off here in Minnesota, they can only go as far as Anthony Edwards can take them. I think the bottom line is how he plays is how it increases their chances or decreases
my guy.
Their chances. So
that's my all-star. Remember that.
I think they took that into consideration, kind of realized that as well. They're only going to be as good as Anthony Edwards can be. And if you can bring in a guy like Mike Conley that can help elevate his game and is also familiar with Rudy Gobert, helping him maybe make an easier transition of getting back to who he used to be in Utah, this was a great gamble and a great pickup. And I think it's kind of fell on a little under the radar. So I wanted to be sure we mentioned it on tonight's spot.
I totally agree.
Good job, Ross.
All righty. And for our fourth and final quarter, just kind of wanted to open it up to any other trades that really caught your guys' attention around the league. I do want to point out there were only two teams that didn't make a single move this deadline week, and that was the Cleveland Cavaliers. Of course, they went ahead and made a huge splash in the offseason, so they already kind of made their big move in Donovan Mitchell from Utah. And the one that was a little weird, didn't make one move at all, the Chicago Bulls. But other than that, I don't know if you guys want to touch upon that fact or any other deals around the league. Just wanted to open the floor here.
Well, also, Miami didn't really do anything either. So,
yeah, that's true.
And that's a team that's very incomplete at this point. But, I mean, who would they move? Kyle Lowry? Who wants Kyle Lowry at this point? I mean, the guy's a spent force, and he's making like $40 million. So, I think, they're just going to have to live with him. No, to me, the one that really, made a lot of waves in my mind is the Jay Crowder going to Milwaukee. Okay. He's now on his third team in less than 24 hours. That's pretty good. He's not quite in Billy Owens territory yet, but he might be getting there. I think it's an incredibly good move for the Bucks. He's been in bubble wrap all season. He's healthy. He's rested. He's got fresh legs. He's got to play a third of the season. His energy down the stretch should really help gas up that team for a nice closing run. And he's a Milwaukee guy, or at least, like yourself, a Marquette guy.
Yep.
So I think Milwaukee, and what did they give up for him? Just draft picks, right? And not even first round draft picks. So I think that puts Milwaukee right there. Maybe even if not even with Boston, maybe even a slight bit above Boston. If those two teams play in the playoffs, I think it's guaranteed to go seven games, and Jay Crowder has really been is a big reason I feel that way.
World B, any trade stand out to you?
Well, it's a little under the radar move, and it's not going to get a whole lot of attention. I think Luke Kennard ended up in Memphis.
Yes,
can help them. I looked at the numbers. I really have a hard time understanding. And I'm not questioning because I'm a big Ty Lue fan. I don't know why he wasn't getting the minutes with the Clippers. And Memphis needs shooting. We've talked about it over and over. They're a great high offensive efficiency team that can't shoot. It was really weird how that worked out. But now Desmond Bane can shoot, obviously. Luke Kennard can be a shooter. It can only help this team. They didn't need to make a huge splash. They need to get Steven Adams healthy. They need to get some calm down. It's a long season. The Ja Morant garbage hopefully will die down for his sake, but certainly for the Grizzlies' sake. And I think Kennard can really solidify that bench and help them really keep from packing it in. And a guy that can hit the shot when J. John Morant, who leads the league in drives, or is among them in drives, dishes it out to a guy like Desmond Bane or Luke Kennard on the court at the same time. So I'll be interested in that. I think Bruce's team, Mike Muscala, is not a bad pickup. It's an under-the-radar thing, but he adds depth. He was 10th in minutes on Oklahoma City, and he was 4th in three-pointers. So he's making the most of time he has on the court. The other things are, they could work themselves out, but I don't know how many second round picks got traded. I didn't have enough time to add all that up, but apparently I told Bruce off air, I think maybe a lot of these teams, there might be some rumor going around that the NBA is going to do away with the second round of drafts from now on, and everybody just decided to unload what they have for the future. But other than that, I can't figure out why second round picks became the thing.
Yeah, and I think the Bucks traded 5 second-round picks for Jay Crowder and their deal. And an interesting part of that trade, too, is they went ahead and sent Jordan Nwora, George Hill, and Serge Ibaka to the Indiana Pacers. And what that essentially did for Milwaukee, much like the Saric trade for Phoenix, is it opened up 2 roster spots. So they were able to go ahead and keep those open for buyout candidates as well. So there's a lot of top contenders around the league that have some open roster spots now for, the buyout market. And that's right around the corner to see who starts getting released off some of these rosters. Now, the one I wanted to talk about that I found interesting was the James Wiseman trade to Detroit. Wiseman reportedly was on their GM's top board as the number one pick in that draft. They, of course, landed, I think, the second pick in that. Yeah, seventh pick. They got Killian Hayes, but they were able to go ahead and get their guy in James Wiseman here and get him at such a easy cost here. I mean, they just traded 5 second round picks for James Wiseman, and that's a heck of a pickup for Detroit. It's the second straight year they've kind of taken a swing at some of these top lottery guys that haven't really panned out. Last year it was Bagley out of Sacramento. This time they get an even younger, probably higher ceiling guy in James Wiseman. And, the question was kind of asked online before we started posting. I did some research, and it's a cost-saving move for Golden State. And from what John Hollinger had tweeted out, this trade alone is going to save them $131 million when you break down the salaries along with the luxury tax. So it was a tremendous cost-cutting move for Golden State. Of course, they're licking their wounds. They could have had LaMelo Ball or some of the other top guys that have turned out to be big talents in that draft. But, very curious to see what James Wiseman can do. Hopefully he'll get an opportunity to play now. Just really hope he doesn't take away too much of Jalen Durant's time, because he's been outstanding for that Pistons ball club when he's moved into the starting lineup.
So Golden State took those 5 second rounders and they traded them to Portland for Gary Payton II. So yeah. Really, that trade was James Wiseman for Gary Payton II, who they had last year.
Yeah, and they didn't pay him. He got a big payday in Portland, but as we know, and as I just mentioned, Warriors deep into the luxury tax, so kind of had to pay a price there, and it had to be their number one overall pick from just a few years ago. So Not a significant move as far as talking about the Warriors improving, but they were at least able to go ahead and improve that payroll.
By the way, the Clippers getting Eric Gordon from Houston was I know his name was mentioned a lot. It was a bit of a puzzler in that Luke Kennard got traded, just because I don't know what Luke Kennard has done to warrant not being on the court a lot, but Eric Gordon is not having a very good season shooting the ball. And I know he's a veteran, but his last postseason experience was 3 seasons ago in the bubble with Houston. It's not as he's been stuck in Houston for the last few years. Now, maybe that's motivation, whatever, but it's not like he has a wealth of postseason experience to bring to the Clipper, which doesn't need it anyway when you have Paul George and Kawhi. But I don't understand. You got rid of a shooter, a better shooter in Luke Kennard, and you brought in a veteran in Eric Gordon, who's really not much of a shooter right now. I mean, we fixed it great, but in present day, he's not much of a shooter.
They also got Bones Highland from Denver, who's going to help them out. But to me, the really significant move they made, and those two are significant, but I think getting Mason Plumlee to back up Ivica Zubats is a really significant move, because Zubats has played great for those guys. But as you both have pointed out numerous times on this show, he's got no backup. He has nobody to help him. He gets in foul trouble. You saw it the other game when they had to put Robert Covington in to play center when he got in foul trouble, and the guy just got completely torched because he's like 6'5". So now, and maybe that's that game, you know, motivated, you know, against Milwaukee, right? Giannis just lit him up.
Yes.
So now you have Mason Plumlee, who is an adventure at the free throw line, but is a solid passer. And a big enough presence in the paint that they don't lose a ton when they put him in for Zubats.
I totally agree with you there, Bruce. I think he's going to be a huge piece off that bench, kind of give them a second unit spark to go ahead and help out Zubac there. And, you know, Zubac's had to manage a huge load this year as far as minutes are concerned. So maybe they can dial that back a bit, make sure he stays fresh for the playoffs. And then you also mentioned Bones Highland. I think Highland was brought in simply because they got him for 2 second round picks. I mean, that was a heck of a steal getting him from Denver. I don't know what Denver's beef is with him, but I would have to assume that him and Mike Malone just don't mesh well or something. But that was another great get by the Clippers and kind of an insurance policy, because it does seem like there's reports going around Paul George has been actively recruiting Russell Westbrook to not sell his nearby apartment just yet. He can just move. If he's bought out from Utah, he can just come across the street and play with the Clippers. But we've
LA basketball is a gift that doesn't stop giving.
I totally expect that to happen, by the way. Oh, I totally expect Russell Westbrook to end up on the Clippers.
How great is that? It's just unbelievable.
And so my final thought for you guys, I know I'm not sure we're doing this tonight, but Eric Gordon, we mentioned him. He had been on the trade block for years and years, and he was just stuck through it all in Houston. Are we now honoring John Collins as the new Eric Gordon? He might be.
I don't get the whole John Collins thing. John Collins is a good player. He's a really good guy. I've spoken to him. There must be something going on there. I've always had a lot of respect for John Collins, and I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a bad presence in your locker room. So I don't know. I mean, they're not going to buy him out. I mean, obviously,
$75 million for the next 3 years after this season. That's the reason behind John Collins.
Yeah, but then play him. Well, they play him, I know, but I don't know. I mean, there's guys making a lot of money that aren't as good as John Collins, but
I agree. His numbers just haven't – he hasn't lived up to where he was when he signed the deal. He was a 2010 guy a few seasons ago that got him a nice contract, and he just hasn't been able to – I don't want to say live up to the contract, but match his production that he had initially when he got – that got him this deal. That's – to me, that's the biggest thing that is going against him.
Hey, yeah. Ross and Michael, this is for both of you. All right. The Knicks get Josh Hart from Portland, reuniting him with his teammate from Villanova, Jalen Brunson. I think that's another nice under the radar move. I think Josh Hart's a good player. He's a beefy guy. He's like 6'5", about 230, can play physical game. Comes from that Villanova program where, guys generally play the right way who come through the Jay Wright system. I think that's a nice – I think Tom Thibodeau is going to love that guy.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who falls out of the rotation now that Josh Hart's aboard here. I mean, of course, they still got Barrett, Grimes. Somehow they still have Fournier, but I like it. He's going to bring added toughness, definitely as a Thibodeau-type guy, and you know what? They can even have dinner with Mikal Bridges on off nights. So they get the whole trio back together. Worked out perfectly.
The unsung winner of that deal were Knicks fans like myself that don't have to watch games anymore and see the camera pan down at the end of the bench at Cam Reddish. And the question is, like, why isn't he playing? Why isn't he playing? Well, it's because he can't play. There's a reason. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't look up my numbers or do my calculations, but that's what it all comes down to. So every game you see him on, the camera pans down at him and wonder, well, why doesn't he get more time? He can't play. If you're a shooter, outside shooter, and can't shoot, kind of running out of things for you to do. So yeah. I agree. I think it could help them. All jokes aside, I think it could actually help them. But then, where are they going to get out of it? Are they going to get out of the play-in tournament field? At this point, I don't see it.
No, yeah, probably not. But they can still be better. I mean, they could still end up with a good record. You know.
Yep.
I got nothing else, guys. I think we emptied our bag pretty good here.
I think we did, yeah. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to our special NBA trade deadline edition of the 48 Minutes podcast. We'll be back with you next week. We hope you have a great weekend, and we will see you on Tuesday. Take care, everybody.